to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband celebrating a normal day of work. I'd like to point out something. If you look behind me, I'll move. You'll see that I made a change. You know, I have my pictures on the wall, but now below that are a whole bunch of postcards. Postcards. Why would I put postcards on the wall? Those are the return postcards. I put them on the wall because I want them there behind me, so every once in a while when they get seen, it's a reminder. I want to remind people that was hate in response to love. I sent those postcards to my family. I didn't send one today because it's, you know, holiday. I sent these postcards to my family and, you know, as an act of love. And of late, they've been coming back. And there's a bunch of them now, more than 24. So they're there. They're on the wall. And it should be in the frame. You know, obviously, not necessarily well, you know, depends. But they're there. And so I'm saying this now. So it's a reminder whenever you get a glimpse of that, you can see the response, which again, a lot of those cards are marked. It is illegal to refuse this because it is. It's against man's law. But again, you know, I say over and over again, it's the rules for thee and not for me. My wife ignores God's law, ignores man's law. That's unfortunate. And I don't like saying this because I love that lady. In spite of this hate that she shows me, I love that lady. I want to recommend something for you to watch. It's an hour-long video, a conversation with Eva Bartlett. It's called "She's Exposing the Truth in Ukraine and They Don't Like It." This was done only like a day or two ago. She is a Canadian reporter. She is completely independent. She works for no one. I've known about her for years because I watched a lot of her stories about in Syria. Her blog is in Gaza because she spent a whole lot of time in Gaza. And in Syria, she's actually interviewed Bashar al-Assad directly because she goes to places and interacts with people remarkably. And I have a lot of respect for her. She's done something on that, again, I have a lot of respect for what she's done. Is she 100% accurate? I don't think so. Because she may be misled in something. But most of the things I've seen from her, because I can check from other sources, she's done extremely well. And right now she says clearly she is not in Ukraine. She is in the Donbass region. You know, the region had separated from Ukraine because, as she describes, apparently she's on a kill list. So if she enters Ukraine, she'll be assassinated. The comfortable position, because I mean this is normal for Ukraine. The number of people within their own government, they do this to. There was like the mayor who was assassinated and threw the body in the middle of the street as a warning to others. There was one of their negotiators between them and Russia. They met, and apparently he wasn't quite in lockstep. They assassinated him. You know, they assassinate their own people. But again, it's there's a difference between Ukrainian people and the leadership who is sponsored by unsavory fellows, you know, like in U.S. and so forth. But she talks, for example, about the Azov Battalion because they are a Nazi group, and they have significant influence in the country. And because you have to remember, when the Avastal, that's the steel plant, in Mariupol was when they surrendered. A lot of the news people called it a release or something of the nature, but no, they surrendered. And you can see the videos of the surrender process. You know, they came in a single file line, had to be searched. And what they do, what the Russians will do, they will search you. And if they find that you have tattoos on you with Nazi insignias on them, you will be arrested. And they knew this. And so a lot of people said, okay, I have to fight to the death, because if I surrender and they find these Nazi tattoos on me, I will be taken as a prisoner of war and will be tried as such. That's why they lasted so long, because they knew it could potentially be a death sentence. And of course, they were killing so many themselves. You know, the value of life is. There was recently a British guy who went to Ukraine, and I should find the link to that video too. That's fascinating. But one of the things that Bartlett mentioned was a lot of the things, because again, she did a lot of stuff in Syria. And, you know, of all the countries in that area, that's probably the one I study the most. And, you know, because I can pretty much explain why the Khan Shukun alleged chemical attack wasn't the false flag. And that's when we fired the however many 19 or whatever missiles it was bogus. And so what we did would be considered a war crime. And then there's the Duma chemical attack only a few years ago. That one is clear. That was a false flag, unambiguously, because the evidence that the OPCW found just. Clear. It was completely staged, but then the OPCW covered it up. But you had whistleblowers in the OPCW that came out and said, here's the evidence. They testified before the UN. Again, the US would not allow those people into the United States to testify before the UN, so they did it electronically. And when the testimony occurred, the US walked out. They would not listen. You know, we don't want to hear things we don't want to hear. The evidence is overwhelming about, you know, the, and, you know, so, but she also mentioned, you know, there was the event of, that I've discussed before, the boy in the orange chair, Amran Dakhnish. Again, the thing that you find just when I talk about, for example, I've been trying to be more conscious of knowing people's names, not the person that was there, just this person. But the boy in the orange chair is Amran Dakhnish. And I've seen interviews with him, with his dad, who actually went to Aleppo to interview him. That would be Eva Bartlett. And I've seen that interview. I actually used one of the photos of them. She also pointed out, she as well as several others, I think it was some months before, a young guy, Abdullah Issa, again, I know these names, was in the back of a pickup truck, 11-year-old, I think, and beheaded by ISIS. The photographer in both cases was the same man. He actually got a picture of himself in both. I mean, the evidence is right there. So, and who was this done? You know, again, there was the ISIS headquarters. This, I think, was in Idlib. That may not be true. But the ISIS headquarters was here. The White Helmets was like a few buildings away. And this was done in a parking lot in front of one of those two. I'm not sure which. So, I mean, out in the middle of the street. And you'll find that if you look at my website, and even more, I just checked for curiosity. I've mentioned that if you do go to YouTube and do a search, pronounce Theanostas, and apparently pronounce other words in Greek, I frequently come up. But, you know, I don't get much traffic at all on YouTube. However, the number two video I have, well, it's interesting. Number three, marriage, divorce, remarriage, adultery, and mercy. 100 views. 102. But my number two video with 214 views is the Theanostas video, which, you know, again, that's a lot for me. I mean, it's a lot because most of them are 5, 10, 15. My number one video with 319 views right now. The title is Amran Daknish, Abdullah Issa. And I have checked in the past, most of the traffic comes from the Middle East. And it's a short video. It's however long it is. You know, and I have a like. but my point in that video was, it's not the boy in the orange chair. It's Amran Daknish. It's not the boy who was beheaded. It's Abdullah Issa. And who interviewed Amran Daknish? Eva Bartlett. So, you know, that was important. Because, again, these are people. There's another person that was interviewed by Eva Bartlett some years ago in Idlib, or outside of Idlib. She went to a community where a house had been hit by a missile more than once, and one day was hit again, and the man was at his work, went home to find his wife and his kids, two kids, I believe, killed by the missile. That man, Shadi Shada, of all the people on my wall, his photo is on my wall. He was being interviewed by Eva Bartlett. That man's my brother. He's a follower of Christ. That man's my brother. One of my things that I have resolved to do years ago, if money picked up, you know, I have no interest in donating to organizations. Definitely not to the institutional church. Because, again, the tithe is theft, and I won't repeat that. But I want to support those who do the difficult. Whether it's the person down the street. But I've grown an affinity for those who attempt to proclaim things. A lot of them will proclaim, you know, it's a great example is, what's his name? Dan Dix. He has a thing called Press for Truth out of Canada. He claims to be a follower of Christ. I would say probably 75% of what he does is superb, in the sense that he digs into things. Well, okay, 75 is right, is good information. I would say roughly 25% is not. Especially when he gets onto cryptocurrencies or investing. I think he's completely off base there. But it's not that I have to find somebody who's 100%. So years ago, he did something about, because he called out somebody. I think it was one of these people saying, I think maybe it was something about homosexuality or feminism or something. He did that, and I said, okay. I mean, this was at least 4 years ago. I sent him like $25 because, and I think it was $25 Canadian, so maybe $20. And I got a response from him. So it was a token gesture, but those are the people I want to support. I've done the same to Eva Bartlett, again, years ago, because the people who do this, I want to support. Lord willing, if the funds come here in the next however many weeks, I will probably try to do some larger one-time donations to these people, a variety of these people. You know, there are the ones, you know, who's the Joe Rogan is the big name right now. Yeah, he isn't, you know, independent, whatnot, but he is financially backed like crazy. So those are not the people. I'm looking at the people a lot of people don't know about. Because, you know, especially when someone's on a kill list, you know, it's kind of like, okay, let's endorse these people. Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, I wanted to, I think you'll find that interview is enlightening. And again, you'll hear a lot of the things that, again, I've talked about. Armand Dakhnish, Abdullah Issa, Shadi Sheda. Because I've done a lot of research on the Duma chemical attack, not only with her work, but a lot of from the whistleblowers. I actually have the documents. There was the one OPCW whistleblower who published the documents, and I downloaded them. I have them. You know, there was the photo of the bomb, allegedly chemical bomb, was laying on a bed. And it, you know, even just looking at that, you can say there's something odd here because there was a hole in the roof, and it's kind of like, how would that? There are too many things. Even from an untrained eye, you could probably say there's something fishy here. There wasn't the damage, and then of course we had, you know, the big name major media go into that room and say, oh yes, look. And there was one, I think it was a woman who pulled off the mask and said, yeah, it smells like chemical, you know, I mean, yeah, it smells like a deadly poison to me. The one other thing she did, you know, in the Duma, was it the Duma? The white helmets are involved in so much of this. And again, she points out again, and she's one who's provided a bunch of evidence, and I've seen lots of sources of this evidence. The white helmets are basically a terrorist organization. They're a PR front for a terrorist organization. Because, well, she relayed this in the interview, and you hear lots of people will say this. They're always at places where the rebels, as they're termed, are attacked, not the Syrians. So they're specific, and they show up, you know, wearing the helmets and they have all the equipment and whatnot, and somebody with a camera, because the whole thing is PR. It's just PR, and you know, it's remarkable. And then of course, they did a documentary movie, whatnot, and they got some kind of Academy Award or whatever for it. And it's PR. And, you know, who pays for it? You know, like the U.S. government. It's just PR. And, of course, the statement that she said, and apparently, that because of their expertise at doing this, they may be showing up in Ukraine to do the same kind of thing, either in a direct role or indirect in the guy. Because... anyway, the deception is remarkable. And you know, when I listen to somebody like this, there are people. There are people in very tough situations in Ukraine right now, for example. on both sides. You know, one of the things that I've heard said, and it brings up a, dare I say, a red flag with me, is perhaps the people in the Donbass region, they're ethnically Russian. So obviously, because again, the borders were arbitrarily drawn with the breakup of the Soviet Union and whatnot, or even before that, apparently. I think it was Stalin who said, okay, we're going to make it here. And done for strategic reasons. Because I think what was described, Stalin wanted to make sure that Ukraine was not a unified Ukraine, but so therefore it was fragmented to put some of the Russian population in there so it wasn't a monolith culture. And, you know, there are issues with, between Ukraine and Poland, for example, because the borders have shifted back and forth, and there is serious dialogue about how Poland can regain some of the Ukrainian territory themselves as Ukraine is collapsing. There are a lot of tensions here. But one of the things that was pointed at, or suggested at least, is that culturally in the Donbass region, they're Russian. But maybe a good percentage, because it was a lot of large industry, was it coal or something in that way? Some large industry was mentioned. And culturally, during the Soviet era, especially large industry, that's why the Azovstal steel place that was built in the Soviet, because you build massive. So apparently that Soviet mentality still has a foothold there. And, that is a concern. Or like I say, it's a red flag. So, I wonder what kind of factor that will play into what will transpire. But again, as pointed out, because if you look at what is happening in the Donbass, especially there, this war did not start in January of this year or February. It started 8 years ago with the invasion by Ukraine into Donbass. And it's been happening. The bombing of Donbass has been going on for 8 years. Ukraine bombing Ukraine. This is easy to find. It's been happening for 8 years. And, apparently one of the things that was done is Russia had, because early on you saw these big, huge lines of trucks and vehicles on the road into Kiev. And it was, you saw them and they were parked. It was kind of odd. Like they're planning to invade Kiev. They never did. Why was that? And of course, now the PR is, we beat them. What was the purpose of that? It kept the Ukrainian military near Kiev in order to protect the city. So all they do is park trucks on the road and just sit there and wait. In the meantime, they pinned down a huge amount of the Ukrainian military, and they could focus on the Donbass, and virtually all of it now has been recaptured. And what they're doing is they continue, the Ukrainians are continuing, have been continuing to shell, fire bombs in. And so it's kind of like what they needed to do is slice that area off. And that's where the real battle has been going on. But then, of course, they also did, the southern part, Mariupol and things of that nature. Because one of the things Ukrainians did is, Crimea, they voted to separate themselves, just like the Donbass region some years ago. And so there was a river that would flow from the main part of the land to provide water to at least part of Crimea. And the Ukraine filled the river to dam it up. So one of the things that was done is they captured part of Ukraine in that southern region and blew up the dam. You know, it's an earthen dam. They blew it up. So, you know, it's because these kind of strategic things, and it's cruel, have been done by the Ukrainian government. But again, there's a difference between the Ukrainian government and Ukrainian people. And I think, because you can find a whole lot of interviews of people saying, you know, what's happening here in my country is wrong. Yeah, you find that in the U.S. But anyway, there are all these things, and I watch that, and I watch this particular video, and I want to encourage you to do the same. If you watch this, you can watch that, because those are the people. People, and there's a list of people like that that I want to support, not only financially, but give them the tools, because the they're obviously banned in so many, you know, some of these people they're removed from YouTube and things of that nature, because the whole point, again, the point behind YouTube, the whole point behind Gmail, is, you know, years ago that would have been considered monopolistic practices, where you simply come in and say, okay, we're going to do something, we're undercut the competition. So what did YouTube do? Here, you can put videos online for free. How do you compete with them? You can have an email account for free. How do you compete with them? They have to do it out of the goodness of their heart. No, not at all. They have to use it to make... They use it not only to make money, but for control. Again, if you have a Gmail account, YouTube reads every one of them. You know, their computers do. For advertising, and also, as I've described, it gives you tracking information and all sorts of stuff. It's ways to get to know about you. YouTube is the same way, because it is a tracking device. Besides, you know, their advertising revenue generates a bunch of stuff. However, besides the tracking and whatnot, they're now the gatekeeper. If you say something, you know, again, if I look at my my YouTube account, I have a video that was put up. It was June 9th, 2020. It was put up and it's marked removed for hate speech. It's the Kaiser Kurios video. They called it hate speech. They took it off. They're the gatekeeper. Find hate in that video. Good luck. It's on BitChute. And, you know, out of curiosity, it's on BitChute. 531 views. So a lot better traffic than YouTube. I get a lot better traffic. And, you know, again, I get, you know, for me, a few hundred views is very good. It appears that most of my foundation series are about 400 to 500 views now. But of course, it's been out there a long time. It's amazing to me. Number 10, obedience to crisis, social security. So that's there. But the illusion of blockchain is my number one video. And the number two, Young Earth Creation, which I think is good. Number three is about the Shofar book, 690 views. That, you know, of course, never. But number four, 688 views. Marriage Defined and a Commitment Beyond. One of my favorite videos. Anyway. So I went. Somebody like Eva Bartlett. I mean, she's been to Syria, she's been to Gaza, and spent a lot of time there. She's been to North Korea. I saw the videos that she did from then. And of course, she's been to Ukraine, or as she points out, she's not in Ukraine, she's in the Donbass. but she was there some years ago. And I can respect somebody like this because they literally risked their lives. Because there are a lot of her peers are dead. But so I want to stand with them, not only monetarily, but give them the technology. So the YouTubes can't cut them off. So the Gmails, YouTube, Google, can't listen to everything they do. They're going to make mistakes and so forth. I've made a mistake or two myself. The list is short. Yeah, right. I want to stand with them. Lord willing, I've had some good interactions recently. Hopefully this week. I haven't heard any more lately, but I hope hopefully this week, it may slip another week, the conversation will start with EG. And maybe the funding will come. You know, again, it could be August. But when it comes, my focus will be to support people who are in difficult situations, who don't know the technology, who are the whistleblowers. And again, those people blow it. Literally, you know, as I point out, especially after they expose one thing, and their follow up usually is stupid, because you know, again, I've done it, and I've seen it with so many. Anyway, not as clear as I'd like to be. These are the people I want to stand with, because I'm a follower of Christ. I'm not going to run from somebody because I don't agree with everything they do. Oh. You know. We had such a wonderful dialogue. And it stretched over a couple days. Oops. On Matthew 7. That was. It's been a really big deal. We've had some serious conversations on John 6 today because of trying to understand what it means about. Where is it here? I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. It's a little bit past that. It's okay. Verse 53. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I'll raise him up on the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. So, you know, it's kind of like, gee, that's sticky. What does it mean? Because one of the part of the conversations there was the Lord's Supper. You know, because the common thing, because, you know, especially like in the PCA, what they will do is, and you know, this is something that I've been troubled with for years. Typical, when they, quote, fence the table, 1 Corinthians 11, 23, for I receive from the Lord what I also deliver to you, that the Lord Jesus on the night when he's betrayed took bread and so forth. But the subject matter starts several verses before, verse 17. But in the following instructions, I do not commend you, because when you come together, it is not for better, but for worse. For in the first place, when you come together as a church, as a ecclesia, as an assembly, I hear that there are divisions among you, and I believe it in part. For there must be factions among you in order that those who are genuine among you may be recognized. When you come together, is it not the Lord's Supper that you eat? For in eating, each one goes ahead with his own meal. One goes hungry, another gets drunk, and so forth. So that context is usually left out. And, you know, I will contend, as I did today, the reason we have that little piece of bread and that tiny little cup is because it's the Catholic version of the host and the wine, with the common cup that you take a sip from, and made Protestant version. But we're following the traditions of men, not the commandments of God. Because I would suggest the Lord's Supper is a meal, you know, because it was based on the Last Supper. Based on the Last Supper, which was patterned after the Passover feast. And, you know, a big meal, you eat with haste, there are other things, you know, the bitter herbs and so forth. So it's kind of like, okay, did somehow the meal change when Christ then broke the bread and passed the wine around? You know, that's the argument from both Catholic and Protestant perspectives. And I don't think it's right. I'm not completely convinced, but I don't think it's right. So it's an area of struggle. But don't you dare question this within the institutional church. Don't question it. Shh. We have our traditions. Don't violate traditions. But, you know, the other thing that was so important, because it was quite related, you know, we've been over, I don't know if I ever mentioned this already, the Matthew 7, judge not for that you may not be judged. And then, of course, the verse 6, do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. You know, that they're all related. And this is where I make the argument. When I make the argument, you know, my argument now is abortion is murder, don't outlaw it. Simply because God outlawed it. But he's never given us any authority to impose laws on somebody else. We have his laws, we obey his laws. What man does, ignore. We follow the Lord, if you're a follower of Christ. If you're a follower of the state, you know, may I recommend Proverbs 1984. if you're a follower of Christ, follow Christ. And the idea of trying to impose on others, lest they trample them underfoot and turn and attack you. So what happens when a pro-life Christian tries to stop somebody at an abortion mill? They turn and attack you. They trample you under their feet. There's no call to do that. We're called to proclaim. The Lord says abortion is murder. But we're not called to go and outlaw it or ridicule those who do. But rather, let me point you to Christ. And let me explain how Christ, when he looks at human beings created in the image of God and have value, and we're not supposed to kill another human being. So don't do that. But I am saying don't do that when you follow Christ. If you don't follow Christ, I have nothing to offer you. But, you know, again, went really deep in these things in the last couple. It's been marvelous. I wish I could do that with my own family. Because there's a struggle, a serious struggle here. You know, it's the idea of I want to know Christ. One of the things brought up again today is the Genesis 32, Jacob wrestling with God. Which, again, I will say Jacob wrestled with Jesus Christ. And held on to him and said, I will not let you go till you bless me. That's our role model. That is what it is to be someone who prevails. What's the Greek, the Hebrew version of the word to prevail? Oh, it's Israel. That's why I will contend. Israel has multiple meanings. It is Jacob, his descendants, the northern kingdom, and the elect, those who prevail, those who endure to the end, as we see in the Gospels. And, of course, there's the Romans 9:6, all who are descended of Israel, in other words, of Jacob, are not Israel, the elect. But anyway, which, so much. I'm in disarray. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore. Did you want a man to make a lot of money? Give you a cushy life? Or did you want a man who would struggle and fumble to follow Christ? Considering what's on my wall, the answer doesn't look good. But know beyond question, I love you, and I want you back.